My name is Amy Esdorn, and I'm here at the Society of Petroleum Engineers Annual Technical Conference and Exhibition at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston, Texas. Today is September 30th, 2015, and I'm speaking with Janine Judah. Janine, thank you for participating in this interview.
Great. I'm glad to be here.
Well, good. Let's begin. My first question for you is, how did you get involved in the industry?
I grew up in the industry. I'm a native Houstonian, grew up here around the industry. My father is an engineer and an SPE member who worked for one of the major pipeline companies. And I always thought that being an engineer would give me the opportunity to solve problems and see the world, and it has.
And so when you were a young child, did you follow him around and sort of ask him questions or?
Not really. The engineering profession was appealing to me because it's a profession of solving problems. And so, no, we didn't work on cars together or anything like that. But I just liked the analytical and problem-solving parts of being an engineer.
And where did you go to school?
Actually, I went to Houston Public Schools. I'm a graduate of HISD. And then my undergraduate and graduate engineering degrees are both from Texas A&M University. And then along the way, while I was working, I earned an MBA and a law degree.
And so while you were at A&M, did you do any kind of sort of internships or in the industry or?
Yeah, I worked one summer as a roustabout out in the field in the West Ranch field, which is located near Victoria. And A&M at that time required all petroleum engineering students to have a field internship, even the girls. So I rode around in a truck and helped them with repairs and worked in the field for a summer. And then I worked a summer in the office for ARCO Oil and Gas Company, and then I eventually went to work for them permanently.
And did you prefer one over the other?
Texas in the summer is not a great place to be out in the field. So although, especially early career, I did enjoy going to the field, you get kind of cooped up in the office for a while. So we would go out for a frack job or logging job and things like that. Back then, we didn't have all the computer wireless interactions, so you actually went out to the field and sat in the truck. So I did enjoy doing that on occasion, and I did a lot of it because I worked my early career in West Texas.
And tell us a little bit about your early career. What was your first job?
I first worked out in Midland as a production engineer on fields primarily in southeastern New Mexico, and I spent most of the 1980s in Midland and West Texas, and during that time I wound up working all over West Texas, the different parts of the geography out there, mostly production and reservoir engineering, just general fields that I took care of. A lot of trips to the field. It's a great place to learn the oil field because you get to see and do a lot and a lot of repetition of things. So, and you get to propose work and see it done and see the results, which you don't always get to see when you're offshore and some of the bigger projects. And so I enjoyed my time there, but by the time I'd been there almost 10 years, I was kind of ready to move on to someplace else.
That's great. So when you started, how did you get your first job?
Oh, my first job was through interviewing at A&M. It's a, you know, obviously still is a very heavily recruited school, and I was a good student, not one of the absolute top students. I was a good student, and so I had multiple offers when I got out.
And when was this? What year?
Well, my first time I got out was in December of 1980, so I went to Midland in January of 81. And I worked for a smaller company there, and then it didn't actually work out that great, so I went back to A&M and got a master's and came back out again in December 1983, and that's when I went to work for ARCO.
And so you've gotten your MBA and you've gotten your JD. Can you explain a little bit about those decisions?
Oh, the decisions. I get asked that a lot. So having graduate degrees in engineering, MBA, and law, so I've kind of covered everything but medical school. I get asked that question a lot about what kind of graduate school to go to. The master's was partly because I didn't like my first job, and then partly because I wanted to get my skills to a little better level. So I just almost did a do-over, went back, got a master's, and then came back out. And so then went to work for ARCO. But in the 80s, there was the big price drop in 1986, and it was a real time of turmoil. So I did my MBA at night while I was working, really is insurance, just another skill set to have, another tool in my box to maybe make me have a better chance of keeping my job in a downturn. And then really it was the same thing with law school. I wound up in the late 80s working with some lawyers and on some lawsuits, and I realized that what they were doing didn't seem that hard. And we were doing a lot of work for them, and I thought maybe I could do that too. And then it was also an insurance. If I wound up having to leave the industry, I had another skill set I could use. So when I moved to Houston, I took the LSAT and applied at both the law schools here that have night programs and got into both of them. So I started at University of Houston and did that at night while I was working. So both my MBA and my law degree were at night while I was working.
And was that complicated or difficult to sort of balance that going back to school and your 9-to-5 job?
You give up your free time. It's definitely a sacrifice. And there were times, especially with my MBA, that I would be coming straight from the field. I'd be, in boots, come out of something in the field and just go to class. But I didn't travel a lot in those times with either of those jobs, so I was able to do it and work it in. But yeah, you give up really your nights and weekends to do that.
Well, kind of speaking to some challenges and that sort of thing that we were just speaking of, what challenges did you face in your career?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of them, but I think I'd put them in kind of two buckets. Especially my early career, there was still a lot of open discrimination against women. In fact, part of the reason my really first job didn't work out was I had a boss who didn't believe I belonged there and didn't mind telling me about it. So you don't see that now, but they still did it then. We were still really unusual, especially out in the field and a distraction. And now, you even go offshore and you see women living out there. But back then you didn't. So we were still unusual and still kind of had to prove our worth in the field. So that was one thing that was really challenging, because you're young too and you don't have a lot of confidence, and here's somebody challenging you and you go, well, I've got the same degree as that guy does, I should know as much. But they weren't quite as enlightened as they are now. And then the other really big one that I would say is that really for about the first 20 years of my career, we had layoffs about every year and a half or 2 years. And the downturn right now, people are really shocked about it and acting very scared about it, but it was a way of life before the 80s and 90s. And so you always had to make sure your skills were up, you had to make sure you were providing value, made sure that you were making your boss happy, because it happened pretty regularly during all that time. So it was challenging to feel secure or optimistic. I stayed because I like it. I mean, but I always had these backup plans with my law degree and my MBA, just in case I didn't make the cut one time, right? But I did, and I'm still here. But it was really challenging, the 80s and 90s.
So you mentioned keeping up your skill set and mm-hmm. doing that sort of thing. And how did you meet that challenge of keeping up your skill set in terms of, they're kind of feeling a lot of, especially fear from other people maybe or whatever. How did you forge ahead and continue to have the clear vision to know what you needed to do to stay competitive?
Well, I don't know if I always had a clear vision, because sometimes there's a lot of serendipity that happens in your career, people you happen to work for or people you know. But obviously, I got a lot of degrees. That was one of the ways. But I also looked for new challenges or new projects that I could work on, or something that would give me an extra little bit of skills and a little bit more experience that would perhaps give me that differentiator for when the next cut would come. So I was always on the outlook for something new to work on and new people to work with. So networking, I've always been a connector and tried to be linked to people. I'm a very natural connector, and I've stayed in contact with a lot of people that I've worked with over the years.
And speaking of the earlier challenge that you mentioned, how did you face the challenge of just maybe saying, well, yeah, I might be young, and but I have this degree just like everybody else? And did you find, were there other people that you could rely on to help you with that, or how did you work through that?
Well, you just have to be good at your job, one, and I say one thing. I'm very tall, and so even, it sounds weird, but in the field, my physical stature helped, so I don't know why. But I was also good at what I did, and I worked really hard at it. I did have a guy that I worked with years ago. He was in my work team, and I'm still friends, primarily with his wife, but I'm still keeping contact with him. That kind of took me under his wing, so when I would get, my boss would yell at me and say, women don't belong in the oil field, I would go down there and talk to him, and he'd kind of talk me off the ceiling. And having those kind of mentors and people that you can go in there and, I would say, not so much vent to, but get a little confidence boost really matters, especially in your early career. I don't think they have people that act like that much anymore. I think we've learned that that's not the way to motivate people, but they were still around back then. And these are guys that went to work in the, you know, late 50s, early 60s kind of guys, and it was kind of old school military, and you just don't see that much anymore, so...
Well, my next question for you is, can you recall a time in your career when you were worried about the industry, and what happened, and how did you overcome that worry?
Well, yeah, I always tell people that I can remember exactly when the big first big price fall was, and it was in February of 1986, because I bought a house in Midland, Texas in December of 1985. So, you know, 2 months later, I bought this, after I buy this house, and the price falls to $9 a barrel, and all these massive layoffs. And so you're really concerned, well, did I pick the wrong thing, and why am I here, and why am I in Midland? And so there's been several times. I mean, this is not the first time that we've had a downturn, and my response has always been to work a little harder, make sure I have my skills set up, make sure my boss is happy with what I'm doing, and keep on trucking, you know, try and keep on working at it. But doing excellent work and making sure you're solving your boss's problems are always a pretty good way to not be the one to get it in a layoff. So.
And what has made working in the industry meaningful for you?
You know, not to be too much of a sales job for SPE, but SPE has been a real highlight because it's really built a lot of friends and network for me over the years. And then, not to sound like Dr. Seuss, but, you know, oh, the places you will go. But the places I've gone and the things I've seen, we take it for granted sometimes that we're a global industry and we'll pick up and travel and get on a plane. But when you talk to friends that are in other industries, they find that completely fascinating that, you know, I'm going to the Middle East this week or South America that week, and we take it very much for granted. But the whole global nature of our business and the people you meet and the cultures you interact with on a daily basis makes it really a lot of fun.
Well, this is my last question for you, and it is, how has being an SPE member affected your career?
It's really been one of the most profound things for me. I always tell people I started my involvement as a freshman. In my freshman Engineering 101 class, the guy who taught it was none other than John Lee, world-famous Dr. John Lee, and he handed SPE applications out to all the freshmen. If you're going to be a petroleum engineer, you need to be part of SPE. So I've been a member now for 38 years. I'm 56, so since I was 18. It's really the source of a lot of my network, my personal business network. And then it's also the way I've learned a lot of my skills, not just straight up leadership, but influencing without authority. It's a lot harder to motivate people when you're not paying them, when they're doing it because they want to follow you, not because they have to follow you. And then just some wonderful, fascinating, different cultural, you know, just all sorts of wonderful people I've met that I never would have met if I just stayed within my company. So it's been a lot of fun to be part of that whole global party. So,
well, thank you, Janine.
Thank you, Amy.